I think that every child has the ability to succeed. It's that we all don't work in the same ways. And so how do we get down into those root causes? As soon as we start to see that a student is struggling.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Part of any good system of support isn't about just reacting to student needs, but also being proactive to support students at risk. Intervening early can be the best way to prevent students from missing out and falling further behind. A way to do that would be to utilize early warning indicators such as attendance, behavior, and grades. These are helpful indicators for identifying students that may need support in the future and allow educators to intervene before a student needs more intense support. Today on the podcast, we talk with Sarah Frizzell, who is a researcher in early warning indicators. We talk about why getting systematic in support is necessary and about why teachers might have a hard time taking attendance. Sarah Frizzell is the Director of Early Warning Indicator Systems and MDSS for the Puget Sound Educational Service District in Seattle, Washington. She has been working on early warning indicator systems since 2012. In that time, she's moved from the analysis of early warning data into coaching school, district, and state agencies on how to most effectively implement these systems. She has helped support a variety of districts from small rural districts in Montana to large urban districts like Portland, Oregon, and across multiple states. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Sarah. Well, today on the podcast, we welcome Sarah Frizzell, who is the Director of Early Warning Systems and Multi-Tiered Systems of Support for the Puget Sound Educational Services. it was like a longer title. So you're out on the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, which is a beautiful area of the country. I love it out there. Sarah, would you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your current role that you're serving in, and maybe just what you drew you to the work of MTSS? Sorry, that was a lot of questions in one. You can start with the first part.
Yeah, no problem. So my name is Sarah Frizzell. I'm the Director of Multi-Tiered Systems of Support, Early Warning Indicator Systems. I work at an educational service district. So out here on the West Coast, we have these kind of entities that play a role in between providing support for districts and kind of being that liaison with the state departments of education. So I get to work with all of the districts in King and Pierce County in the state of Washington at this point. And that's about 40% of the student population in the state of Washington. So a lot of work with the districts, and then also just kind of working with the state to make sure that we're aligned with what their visions are as well.
So you've been working with multi-tier systems of support and early warning indicators for a while. So do you want to kind of give us a little bit of background about how you kind of like came into this work, and even why maybe this specific niche area of education is a passion of yours?
Yeah. So my background was actually economics and statistics. And I was very interested in looking at microeconomics, intergenerational poverty. How do we kind of help our society move into a more wealthy society with sustainable outcomes for folks? And education kept rising to the top of that. So I switched into more of the education side of the work, still using those statistical models. So when I first started, it was more around how do you analyze the data for those future student outcomes, like high school graduation in 4 years, college preparedness, then going back down into like ninth grade preparedness. And then, you know, the further that we got into it, it was like, well, what do we have for elementary school kids? And so looking at outcomes of third grade reading. Early warning systems usually takes attendance, behavior, and course performance data and tries to predict, where's that cut point, that threshold that we know that students usually start to struggle in. So that's the beginning, is really that data analysis side. And then as I kind of moved more into the work, it became much more apparent that, you know, obviously the data alone is not going to change outcomes. And so then I started going a little bit more into, okay, well, what's the easiest way to implement these? What's the most effective way to implement these kinds of systems? And the high school graduation piece was a big starting point for me. I think one of the reasons why I'm very passionate about it is I'm actually the only child out of my family, out of five, including my siblings and my step siblings, to graduate high school. And so it's a very close and personal, topic for me. And I think that every child has the ability to succeed. It's that we all don't work in the same ways. And so how do we get down into those root causes as soon as we start to see that a student is struggling, so that they don't lose hope and end up dropping out or being pushed out of school?
Wow. I think that, I've talked to lots of different educators, and one of the things I see is that there's always something that, like, personal or even just a childhood experience that sort of is attached to this work that we do and, we're passionate about. Like, one of the reasons I was a middle school teacher was I didn't have the best middle school experience, and I always wanted to, like, be a light to the students that may, So I think that that is just such a valuable piece of our work, is like even just that personal attachment to it. So that's very interesting that you say that. So when you, like, how long have you been working on this? Cause I feel like early warning indicators, it makes sense to me that it is not a new thing, but I feel like I haven't heard about it until recently.
It's really interesting that you say that, because when I started working on it in 2012, and it had already been kind of pioneered by Bob Belfance out in Johns Hopkins. And he was kind of the father of early warning indicator systems. But when I explain what I do to folks and I say, yeah, we use attendance data and behavior data and course performance to provide supports to students, everybody's like, well, aren't we already doing that? It's like, yes. I would say the systemized piece is different. And the other big piece is really trying to get proactive. I think a lot of times schools are just overwhelmed with a lot of different priorities and supporting a lot of kids. And so even trying to be very systematic about what thresholds we're using. So that's a big piece of the early warning system that I would say is different from some of those other alphabet soup systems of MTSS, PPIS, RTI, all of those, is that early warning indicator systems really think about what's that cut point that we're going to intervene at early on. So for example, student misses 5 days in a row, for example, something's going on. Right? Like, nobody misses 5 days of anything unless something's going on. And so those are the points, even if you understand that they were sick, these are still the points where we need to be reaching out to the families, reaching out to the students, and making sure that they have what they need to continue to be successful. Mm-hmm. So I would say I don't think it's a new thing. I think using data has been around for a long time, but that threshold piece is really what kind of sets it apart and also is the actionable piece to just have more equitable student outcomes as well, that it's not just the kids that are on our hearts and minds that we're supporting, because that happens a lot. It's also those kids who are really quiet. They show up all the time, but maybe they're not getting good grades, So really trying to figure out why students are struggling. Yeah.
Well, and that's I think the part of the making it more systematic makes sense, because, if we are just going by our gut or like, oh, these are the ones we care about the most, we notice when they're gone. Like, we're missing that piece of, like, there are those that are quiet and we forget that they're there, or, there's something else going on, whether that, they're a really good student, but their grades aren't, or they're present every day, but their grades aren't, like, matching that, And so I think that I understand that, how that's systematic and being proactive in it, where, like, you're find out, or like, what's the point where we need to intervene and make a change. So for you, like, maybe for our listeners, maybe you want to talk a little bit about, like, some of those statistics around early warning indicate, like the thresholds that maybe that you're seeing as important factors?
Yeah, I would say, so definitely from the times when I was working more on the analytical side, we see very different thresholds actually across different districts. So mm-hmm. I've worked with tiny districts and tiny rural districts in Montana, all the way up into like kind of larger urban districts like Portland Public in Oregon, for example. And the cut points look different for each one. Now I would, you know, so some of them actually, you know, some of the indicators fell out completely. For example, behavior isn't one that we consistently saw be correlated with high school outcomes or high school graduation outcomes over time. But in general, what we see, if we're, you know, based on some of that national research, is around, you know, and okay, so I'm gonna give you what Attendance Works says on the attendance cut points, and then do a disclaimer with it. So Attendance Works talks about chronic absenteeism is anything less than 90%, attending less than 90% of the time. So really where you should start to intervene is if a student misses more than 2 days a month. That's like general what those are. Now, I would say one of the problems with that right now since the pandemic is that we don't really have those outcome variables for 4 years afterwards. Right. So we don't have any data that's really able to confirm that that threshold is still the point. And what I've noticed from working with districts in my region is that our absentee rates are much higher right now. And so if you tried to set the threshold at 90%, you're flagging 80% of the kids. Now that's way too much for any team to be able to get their arms around. So what I'm advising districts right now to do is look at what your average absenteeism rate is, like chronic absenteeism rate, not your average daily attendance, but actually by student, what's the average that students are missing? And then start there as, okay, now how do we support kids who are like 5% less or way far off track? And that can just help us kind of get our arms around a little bit more. So that's the attendance piece. I think that needs to unpack a little bit more. Behavior, they usually say 1 to 2 incidences, whether that's exclusionary or something within the building. Office discipline referrals are something that's hard to track, but can also be an early warning system. If you have a kid that's continually getting office discipline referrals, it might be a time to have some conversations. and then with course performance, even failing one grade can be indicative of whether a student graduates in 4 years, I think, or ninth grade preparedness if we're looking at middle school data. And I think that really could be broken down in more ways. So if you're looking at your freshman year, for example, and you know that the student needs 4 years of math or 4 years of English, and they miss and they fail a semester even in their freshman year, they're going to be behind. So being able to like even think about what are those core subjects. And I would say even looking at your electives, if a student is missing PE all the time, you know, or failing PE, what are some of those underlying root causes that might be going on with that student? Maybe they're being bullied. Maybe there's a situation with the teacher that we can start to kind of unpack as well.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, I know as a middle school teacher, and I was on a team of teachers, you know, looking at not just their core classes, but like how they do in other things is really important. You know, it's about addressing the whole child need, because like we said, a student can show up every day, but if their performance sometimes doesn't match that, it, you know, we want to solve those problems too.
Yeah. Oh, and I think it also gets into, you know, students are complex. They're humans. Just like us. And we're comprised of, when we show up every day, we are comprised of, you know, whatever happened that morning, whatever is going on kind of consistently in the background. And being able to look across all those different indicators is really important. And I would also say less is more. So a lot of times when we talk to teacher teams or school-based teams, there's so much data that they have access to that it's hard to focus on, well, which students are we really trying to support here? We get lost in all of that. And so I think that's the other powerful thing about early warning indicators is we're saying like three things. Look at these three things, look at the interaction between them. And then we can start to have those conversations about what might support those students.
Yeah. Best. Well, and less is more. We talk about that here at Bridgy Minds a lot about just, you know, the right kind of data, you know, we don't need to be vampires of data, as our product manager says. She's like, you know, we don't need to take it all. Just a few things. I think that is, man, as a teacher, that makes so much sense to me, because those things, you know, behavior, attendance, grades, like those are, you know, those are big things. And I would say those are really easy things to talk to parents about too, because those are, you know, those are easy things to partner with parents about, like having them attend school and their behavior and stuff like that. It's easier maybe than to unpack than maybe like a reading score or math score, some of those other things. You know, those are necessary too, but that's a good starting point, I think, for many parents and families.
Yeah. And then it's not that you dump the rest of the data necessarily.
Yeah.
Although I do like that phrase, like, don't be a data vampire, ask for what you need. And that's sufficient. But having those other data elements can help you kind of unpack what is going on. Like you just said, get down into the root cause. So, you know, I get a lot of pushback sometimes of like, well, we also have all this other data and these are very important. And they are very important: homelessness, migrant status, ELL status, things like that. But I try to encourage folks to really think about that as a group of students. Those are things we can't change. So anything that's outside of our locus of control, we kind of need to like, okay, that's a contextual factor. It's not something that we need to, that should be putting kids into boxes, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like those maybe, yeah, secondary factors for, and I like what you said about things that are outside of our control, because oftentimes as educators, there is a frustration of like, there's only so much that we can control with a student, you know, within the bounds of the walls of the school. And so I think that that's really true. And you know, and I think sometimes attendance feels almost out of our control, but I think that's where partnering with parents, you know, and solving some of those issues too are important. So you not only do research around this kind of work, but you also do a lot of training and working with school districts. And you kind of mentioned this a little bit. What are some barriers or even like areas that you, that are struggle for districts looking to kind of implement a systematic way to look at early warning indicators?
Yeah. So the last 2 years we've really been, well, since the pandemic, we've really been honing in on attendance, because it's been, you know, it's actually a behavior as well. So there's that piece, but really focusing in on attendance. And I would say some of those most common barriers are, I mean, number one, I want to acknowledge the fact that everybody's on fire. School is very difficult. There's a lot of different challenges that are going on. And so you have folks that are putting out fires basically all day long. And so it's hard to find the time, first of all, just to block off an hour for a team to meet once a week. And that would be best practices: meet once a week, go over your student data at least every 2 weeks. And that can be hard to carve out a time, a chunk of time to do that. I would say another barrier is usually the data itself. Again, everybody has student information systems. And this is where, again, one of those, like when I'm talking to non-education friends and family, it's like, well, everybody has access to that data already. You know, everybody's already collecting it. Yes. And the reporting side that makes it easy to quickly identify these kids is very difficult. For most schools. When I first started out in this work back in like 2012, I was working with a district, a few districts at that point, where, you know, the idea when I'm presenting on it and kind of first introducing it, folks are like, yeah, that would be easy. We've got that data. You know, even our district teams, right? We've got that data. Well, then we get into it and it's like, yeah, but we can't put the data together in these ways that kind of flag students quickly, especially if we're looking across multiple indicators. We're trying to be quick about it in our meeting. Really, that data needs to be prepared beforehand. And then the other piece that we talk a lot about is how to prioritize those students. So those students with a recent change, for example, if they've, you know, had really great attendance or really, you know, really great grades, and then all of a sudden there's a drop in that, that's a moment to intervene, right? Before it gets any worse. That's a hard variable to track. our systems are not set up to track, from time period one to time period two, those changes. And I would say the other piece of that that can be beneficial is looking at kids who have had poor behavior. We intervene and now they're doing much better. Right. And so that's the time to also give that praise and, reward side to continue mm-hmm. that kind of behavior for the student. But I would say that data piece, looking and getting the data in the way that we want it to be. And then the tiered system side of it is complicated. Mm-hmm. The interventions, the supports, which ones, when do we provide those? A lot of times when I first start working with the district, it's like folks want a magic bullet. There's no magic bullet, folks. And if anybody tells you that they have it, they're lying. So, I mean,
I was really hoping that that's what you were going to come on here and tell us is like, what's the magic bullet, Sarah?
Yeah. I wish I had that in my back pocket, work myself out of a job real quick. I would do it. But I do think just getting systematic around the interventions is another difficult thing. We have so many different programs going on in the schools. You know, maybe we have a student support team, and we maybe have an MTSS team, and we maybe have a teacher grade level team meetings, and we have, X and Y and Z. And so a lot of times everybody's kind of doing things in silos, and there's not a lot of communication across teams. And that communication piece is really critical to setting up the system. And it's something that we normally haven't done. So trying to get people to kind of reinvent the way that we're approaching it. I always encourage us not to actually reinvent. If you've already got a team that's looking at data, let's integrate some of this early warning system data into what the team's looking at to help drive some of those conversations. But otherwise, it's like sometimes we see four different teams looking at one student and trying to provide supports. And the right hand comes off looking like the left hand doesn't know what it's doing. So I think that systems piece is really carving out the time, that communication piece, the data, and then really thinking about what those interventions are, what we have across the whole entire school. So I go through an activity with teams a lot of times with just list out what interventions you have that you know about, and just your team. And now let's kind of spread this out and see what we have and how can, which one of these interventions support which indicators, for example. So like check-in, check-out is a nationally research-based intervention where the student's checking in with a particular person. Mentorship is another one that's research-based. And so maybe we have those programs and those help support the student in multiple areas, you know? And so as we're kind of filling this out and we're trying to identify like what supports we have for students, I also encourage them to think about like what's the capacity that they have available to support those students so that we can kind of back out and also think about, all right, we know that we have supports for 50 students. But we look at our data and we actually have 100 students that need supports. That's a gap. That's kind of the supply and demand analysis of like how many kids need support and what do we actually have? And when we see gaps, then what do we do? When we see that things aren't working, what do? Or do we even have a process for evaluating whether what we're putting the students in is working or not? And once we start to identify those gaps, then reaching out to our community-based organizations, our churches, are, you know, those folks around us that care about kids that we know want to support us, the more direct that we can be about like, okay, we need more mentors. We need more tutors. We need, you know, when we're really specific about our asks, a lot of times the community will step up and start to help out. And again, those smaller rural districts, like they don't have a lot of resources often. And so even local businesses in Montana, I remember some of those districts would partner with the local businesses to kind of help support different initiatives around attendance, mm-hmm. around grades.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that, and I think that's really, there's a couple of things I wanted to comment on what you said. I think the systematic piece is really important. And we do a lot of work with helping support districts, like really thinking about the framework that you sort of operate under and kind of bringing those things together. And something recently I read, it was about how like maybe there's some things that we've always done that we maybe need to subtract and like stop doing so that we can like not work in silos, right? It's like, well, we've always had this team. Well, if you have it, like, are we duplicating efforts? And I think that that is, you know, I think that's a really important thing for school districts to think about, and even just schools of like, where are we duplicating things where we just need to come together? Because that's, you know, we don't want to, we only have so much, you know, time and resources and yeah. energy and capacity. I like what you said about capacity, because I think that's really key right now. Like you said, when districts are kind of on fire, or educators in general, and there's a limited capacity to be able to do the things that we want to do. We really want to examine that. And yeah, being very specific with asks, because I think that there are a lot of people that want to help schools, right? There's so many people that are supportive of schools, and whether that be, you know, churches or businesses or community organizations, like they want to be supportive, but sometimes they're like, we don't know how, like, we don't know what it is. So yeah, those are really great points.
Even those little pieces of, you know, how many students are we putting into some of these interventions, and are they actually getting better? That's a piece that I see teams struggle with as well. You know, we've got all the initiative and the buildup with like putting the kids in the interventions and supports, and then we're not following up to see if they're actually making the difference. So that's another way to kind of like you were just saying, that's what reminded me of it is, you know, we've done this forever. Or especially if somebody kind of brought that intervention into the school, they kind of marry their interventions. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know when to break up, folks. Like, this is not having an intended outcome.
Well, yeah, really examining that data, you know, or the metrics of like, was this successful? I think that many times having the capacity to not only like do those interventions, but actually spend the time to look at the data is really key, and to come back and reflect, and making those quicker, because I think oftentimes we're like, oh, well, a week's been by, it's kind of successful, but like, you know, with kids, I think some of those changes need to happen quicker. Oftentimes we don't act soon enough. And so I think that is important, and having a systematic way to do it is also like part of, the help. And so having districts really think through like those kind of things are really important, because, and it matters to those kids, and, you know, helping them as soon as possible.
Yeah. And one other thought about just the systems piece is a lot of times our brains automatically go to those kids who are furthest off track, right? Those are the kids that are running, you know, they're missing class, they're walking around in the hallways, they're, you know, they're having a yeah. lot of struggles. And so I think a lot of this is also thinking about some of those whole school supports and small group supports as well. So when we think about whole school, for example, I was just listening to some work from Johns Hopkins, and they were talking about the new ABCs being agency, belonging, and connectedness. And those are pieces that are hard to measure on, let's say, like an individual level. But if you have any kind of school climate survey, any kind of socio-emotional learning survey, you know, we're surveying kids a lot. Any of that kind of information of like, okay, a lot of our kids aren't feeling like they're connected to school, or like they belong here, or like they have any agency over what's going on. The more that we can kind of understand and unpack those pieces, that's what we can actually implement as interventions school-wide. And then thinking about different groups of students also, like if we know that our Black and Brown students, for example, aren't feeling welcomed in the classroom, and that's what we're seeing coming out of the data, that's an excellent time to start thinking about how do we increase sense of belonging and have some of these conversations with the kids and families and communities to actually create an environment that feels supportive. Because I don't know about you, but if I was in a situation in work of not feeling welcomed, if I was being bullied, if I had, you know, a boss that was completely overbearing, I would start to look for a new job. And that's not the type of agency that our kids have, but they're starting to vote with their feet, I feel like, a little bit more. And that might, especially since the pandemic, of I can learn on my own. And there are other things that I might, you know, high school students, I might need to work, I might need to take care of younger siblings. So we start to vote with our feet. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit more because we've done education, same content forever. And it's not necessarily keeping up with the current times.
Yeah. Well, and I think student agency is really... for me, it was always a big deal in my classroom. Like I wanted to know what they thought. I wanted to make sure what I was doing was, you know, that they had some choice in the matter, because I know that, you know, kids don't have a choice of whether they're supposed to be in school, you know, they're supposed to be in school. And so I think that there, you know, enabling ways to have student choice and have student voice be highlighted in what we're doing is really important. I think connectedness is huge, is a huge piece for students too. Like, yeah, if you don't feel connected to people, you don't have ownership or even just like attachment, you know, and that's huge for, I mean, for all of us. Well, so in all this work that you're doing, what are you like most proud of and excited about right now?
Well, I think what I'm most excited about right now is really incorporating the student, the voice of folks. So forever and ever and ever, I've been very focused on the quantitative side of the data, just the numbers. And the numbers aren't, a lot of times the numbers just confirm what we already know, really, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so, but it doesn't, those numbers kind of mask the underlying why things are going on. And a lot of times what I see working with teams is that there's a bunch of adults sitting around the table and we're theorizing what we think works without ever actually going to the students. We take, you know, those stories of the few kids and we try to make something, an intervention for the few rather than interventions for many. And mm-hmm. so some of the work that I'm really excited about right now is doing things like student fishbowls, where we have the students on the inside, you have a facilitator come in, ask asset-based questions, you know, not like, why didn't you show up to school? Why aren't you doing this? But more of like, what makes you show up to school? What makes you excited to come to a class? You know, things like that. So you have the students in the middle that are answering these questions and you have the administrators or the team on the outside just listening for that whole entire conversation. And then we flip it and the administrators are on the out, kind of asked, what did you hear? What kind of changes can you commit to? And checking for understanding with the kids after that. And so you have this kind of back and forth dialogue almost that's in a very structured way, making sure to invite the students who are the most affected. That's another kind of stumbling block I see a lot of times is we go towards the students who are in, we've already always gone to, they're the ones who always volunteer. And those mm-hmm. students might not have the whole picture of what's going on with the students who, you know, maybe don't feel as connected to school. Mm-hmm. So I think being able to take that quantitative lens of like, here is the numbers, here are the students that we want to think about, here are, you know, broadly the issues that we're dealing with, and then funneling it down more into these conversations with students is really powerful. It can give us a lot of insight. The thing that I would suggest to folks that I keep trying to tell my teams about is when you do this, when you engage students, always make sure that you're following up with what you did with their voice. Now, whether that's mm-hmm. surveys or these kind of more intensive listening sessions with students, being able to know how your voice is being used encourages you to use it in the future. If you think about mm-hmm. yourself or myself, if I'm continually asked something and I have no idea what happens or I don't feel like anything changes from what I've been talking about, I'm less likely to give my voice in the future, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's one big piece is just thinking about how do we get that information back to the students? The other piece is that I'm excited about again is that teacher voice piece. We have such mm-hmm. rich expertise within our buildings. We have some new teachers that have new exciting things to try out. We have experienced teachers who have some tried and true methods. And being able to give some space around a topic, I have found, number one, increases the teacher buy-in for whatever changes we're wanting to make in the school. Mm. And also gives us a lot of ideas that maybe we didn't think about. In those listening sessions with the teachers, our biggest question was, the reason why we started it was because we saw that the attendance data wasn't always accurate. And so when we, as the team, were sitting, it's like, I mean, we're going to ask what some of the barriers to taking attendance are. Does anybody have an example what that might be? The team was like, no, I can't think of any reason why. Well, then we start to get into the teacher conversations and there's several reasons why. Some of them were very easy systems pieces that just need a little bit of a tweak and would make their lives so much easier. And some of them are broader pieces that probably need a little bit more unpacking, but it at least gave us a couple of action steps that we could take back to the team and say, okay, here are low-hanging fruit interventions or supports for teachers that we can provide.
Yeah. Oh, I was laughing because I was thinking about how one year I I don't know what was happening, but it was like very notorious that we would get an email at least once or twice a day. Please don't forget to take attendance. Please don't forget to take attendance. And there were times where it'd get to the end of the day and I'd realize I had not taken attendance because it was, I don't know, things happening in the hallway between class periods, or like you had just a really active class that you had to get going. Like you didn't have a minute to like breathe, you know, and to sit down and take attendance or whatever. And I just think about, and it's a kind of a running joke. I think I've seen memes around it with teachers of just like, I took attendance every day, every class period today. Like I get a prize, you know, like just things that teachers, it's like such a, I think many teachers will relate to that, like yeah. Remembering to take attendance, especially secondary teachers when it's like 7-6 hours a day where you have to like record it in there.
Yeah.
Or you take attendance and then a kid pops in that he was late to class, or it was, he was 20 minutes late and he didn't have a pass. And, you know, like there's, I'm sure that that's what you've uncovered of like certain things that were just
certain things like life that happens, you know, within the classroom. And I think I really want to praise those teachers also for being vulnerable with us and actually admitting like, dude, sometimes at the end of the day, I just try to remember who was in which class, you know? And so I mean, there was, we made the space safe. We made the space to have those conversations so that folks could be vulnerable. I think that that's another important piece if you're considering running either student groups or family groups, community groups, parent, teacher, whatever, is to make sure that you have some of those relationships and provide a safe space. That none of it, again, asset-based, not deficit-based, and you're going to get a lot more out of it.
Yeah. Oh man, now my mind is rolling about all the reasons that we're attendance. So our podcast is called School and Around. So I'm going to kind of wrap up with a fun school question. Do you have a really fun memory around your school experience when you were young?
So I was good at school. I wouldn't say I enjoyed school necessarily, which I think is another passion of why I'm in this work, actually, is like, look, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be so painful. No, but I mean, my family moved around a lot as we were growing up. So a lot of my school experience was just trying to navigate different cultures and different climates of schools. Every time I walked in as a new kid, I would say I probably moved, we probably switched schools like 8 times moving growing up.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So there was that piece. But I would say, you know, by the time I got into high school, some of my most impactful classes were not my core classes. So debate, for example, I think helped me become the researcher that I am today. And it breaks my heart sometimes when we're talking about cutting arts and things like that, because we just want to focus on the core. Debate really taught me to be this kind of multifaceted thinker, looking at both sides of an issue, because you're always going to have to debate both sides. You know, convincingly. So gathering your research, making sure that you're plugging any holes that might be in your arguments, really made me into the researcher that I am today. And it was a great fun to do that. I think theater and music, I mean, those are the pieces why I showed up, and the teachers that I made those connections with. And so, yeah, I mean, I think those were my fun experiences in school.
That's really great. I love that. I, as a also former theater kid, you know, and music, all of that, I think electives and specials classes are so important for kids. Like you said, they're the reason some kids show up every day, because they get to do something fun. So, that's really great. I always kind of like to ask that question, because everyone has, you know, unique experience. Some people are like, recess was my favorite. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today and just sharing all of your knowledge and experience and just your insight. I think that's so valuable for teachers. The work that you're doing is important, and I'm sure that the Northwest is glad to have you up there.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for having me. This has been a really fun conversation.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes.
As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branchy Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.